Welcome to the Plus Special Guest Podcast number 2. No poo jokes, please. Thought I would introduce someone into the show. You'll hear him a few times. You maybe heard him mentioned at the Jim Gellity show. You'll hear him in a few in this one. It's Paul Hamill, her producer.
How you doing, Jamie?
How's it going?
All right.
So just thought I'd introduce because he does get mentioned a few times. He is the producer of the show and he also runs Abbey View Studios, on which we record this fabulous podcast in.
Yes. Our ultra stylistic podcast room, media room, yeah.
Right, no, you've not paid for an advert, so you can do.
Sorry.
But someone who has paid for an advert,
I'm just so excited because I'm getting to come out from behind the desk today.
Oh, well.
Usually I'm just watching levels, so it's nice to be on the mic.
Well, we will get to someone who has paid to be on this show today.
Yep.
See that for a link. Quality. Cheesy, I know. But the Retro Store. The Retro Store is an awesome way to start your very own collection. Whether it's games, comics, or records, and plus special guest customers get very special discount off their first box. Take their vinyl box, for example. You get 3 hand-picked albums delivered to your door every month. Ever seen the price of vinyl on HMV or Amazon? Why not get 3 amazing records delivered to you for £18 every month? When you sign up, you explain what music you love and what music you hate. Tastemakers. Yes, tastemakers.
Tastemakers.
Yeah, tastemakers.
Tastemakers.
I thought that was a made up word. See, when I went to university, I went to uni with a lot of hipsters.
Uh-huh.
And there's this guy and he was explaining this new social media and he went, yeah, you know, it's like a Facebook but for tastemakers. And I thought that was just a made up word, but it's clearly not. They're music tastemakers. That makes more sense to whatever the hell he was talking about. But anyway, the Retro's tastemakers will pick 3 LPs chosen specifically to your own taste and explain in each box with a note of why they picked those albums. Members also get exclusive access to the add-on store, where you can level up your boxes and save 50% off on RRP goods. For example, 3 records added to your delivery for just £10. Over time, members will accrue retro rewards. Think of them as little frequent flyer miles, except you can spend the points on gifts or one-off goodies, like vinyl care kit. Not bad. Shipping is completely free across the UK, and the first box is 20% off for listeners of the Plus Special Guest Podcast. See, stay with me and I'll look after you. 20% off if you use the offer code PSGPOD. To get involved, visit theretro.co.uk. That's theretro.co.uk.
Sounds like a good deal.
It does sound like a good deal. Like, I don't know about yourself. Oh, you don't have you have a small record collection.
Yeah.
This is a good way of boosting that. I collect records. I have quite a big collection. I think that's a good deal.
Yeah, yours is bigger than mine. I cut mine down recently. But
that's not the only department.
What I was going to say, though, about the tastemaker thing, it's quite good that they kind of try and think, oh, what will this guy like or what will this girl like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Rather than just, we'll pick 3 random records.
Exactly.
So that's quite, because a lot of these things are like that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like that could be a future sponsor. You don't diss them.
Sorry, look it.
But that's the thing, it's personalised. You know, someone's actually put some thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just like, and the thing is with records are, they're extremely addictive. Mm. Like, I don't know how many I've bought. Just, I've got like 3 albums of the exact same album. They're all different colours.
Totally.
This is a good way to start and it's cost effective. Like, I've spent £50 in a vinyl here, £30 in a vinyl there, £20 in a vinyl there. Mm-hmm. You're getting 3 for £18 and off your first box, you're getting 20% off with the offer code PSGPOD.
Can you beat up?
Exactly.
Can you beat up?
And also, just to let you know, if you can hear some music in the background, someone singing, there's actually someone else in the studio rehearsing now, but it does sound fantastic. I would tell you his name, but I don't know it, but I'm sure he's...
It's escaped me. A very talented individual from Greenock.
Mm-hmm. But don't get many individuals that are talented for Greenock.
Ooh, risky. So there goes your viewer base, your listener base in Greenock. No, but I'm going to have all this stuff up on the social media, studio, social media.
Right. I'll let you plug your studio.
Yeah. Abbeyviewstudios.co.uk, and that'll take you to the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and give you basically information, what we're about, what we do. And you'll find that young man's name somewhere.
Mm.
Well, hopefully.
But we'll get on to the actual show. Today's guest is none other than Sanjeev Kohli, otherwise most well known as Naveed from Still Game. This was a really fun show to do. He was a good laugh. We talk about, you know, films. Did we talk about music? I think we talked about music.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about everything.
Yeah, he talked about how that when he was growing up, he sort of listening to a certain type of music, let us say, and had to go and, you know, find alternative music. So that's good. That's always good when you have to do that, because then you're going to find music that you like for life and stuff. So
yeah,
so
it was kind of interesting. So it was a very fun show to do, and I'm sure very interesting for you guys to listen to. So punch it, Paul. Sanjeev, how's it going?
Aye, not too bad, not too bad. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. Hope you were saying that you couldn't really find the place, but you got here okay.
I mean, as much as we're sort of slaves to modern technology, sat-nav, it just has this kind of postcode blindness. So, thing was, is that's the other thing, there aren't nearly enough, God, turn to an old man, there aren't nearly enough street signs anywhere.
Yeah.
So, I thought I was on the right street, but I couldn't be convinced. So I found the number of the street, but I thought, I've got the right number, but is it the right street? And then I had a slightly existential argument with myself. If I went in there anyway, would there be a parallel podcast that I could do anyway?
Oh, a rival.
So I did a circuit, and then I'm here now.
Well, the weather's a lot better from than when Jim came on. Jim was on the last show. It was snowing. He came from Cambus Lang, and he was on the motorway, and he says, I very nearly turned around, everybody else was, but he didn't. So we were glad they didn't, because then we wouldn't have had
the podcast happened, yes. And that was the first one as well. Yeah. So that would have been a very shaky foundation. Yeah. If you can't build on nothing, can you?
But then you would have been the first guest, so...
Then I would have been the first guest. But... I'm glad. I don't like being the first of anything.
Yeah.
I don't like being a pioneer. I'm a bit of, I'm going to say shite bag. I've said it now. I don't know what the language parameters are.
No, you're happy to swear. Because I brought up the swearing with Jim as well, and he said he was very, very prudish. So.
Really? Well, here's the thing. Right. I have just recently watched, what do you call it? Three Billboards.
Oh, we're...
Okay, I won't spoil anything.
No, because we're possibly, depending on how long this lasts for, we might go see it tonight.
Well, can I give you one spoiler?
As long as it's not going to like ruin it for me.
It's very, very good.
Oh, that's what I've heard.
And it's very, very dark, and you'll laugh at things that you shouldn't laugh at, which I like.
Nah, it's a good...
It's very good. I mean, your man... why have I completely forgotten his name?
Is it Mark McDonough?
Mark McDonough.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in Bruges.
Yeah,
in Bruges. Seven Psychopaths. It's in that same vein. I think he's kind of actually got his own subgenre now. Incredibly dark stuff. Why did I bring it up? I had a reason. Yes, Frances McDormand won for a Golden Globe for a performance, and you should take the time to watch her acceptance speech.
I've seen people link it, but I've not watched it yet.
Well,
I've heard it's good.
Watch it, because she says the word shite.
Oh, really?
And she does with an E. So I don't know. She must have a Scottish or possibly Irish person in her life.
Mm.
Otherwise, why would she know that word?
That is very true.
That's one of her better kept secrets.
Or whether maybe Martin McDonagh said it.
Could be
on the sex scene.
Could be, but is he? I mean, what is it? What's
I don't know.
Is background? Is he from Paisley?
No, he's definitely not from Paisley.
Oh, he's from Renfrew, isn't he? Yes.
Don't talk about that.
He's from Bide.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know where she's got that from. But it was just, I had to rewind it. That's fantastic. Well, so I liked her already. Mm-hmm. She's in my favourite film of all time, which is Raising Arizona, and so I like her even more now, which is great.
There you go.
Because she said shite, because I'm that shallow. But no, that is a great film. It's a very, very good film.
Good. I'm looking forward to it. I was a big... In Bruges is probably one of my favourite films of all time.
Yeah.
And I went to Bruges in December there.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Did anyone land on you from
the
tall height?
No. But the tower was shut. The tower was closed.
Was it?
Because of the... Apparently there was a light out on the stairs.
I was going to say, I thought maybe there were too many tribute acts jumping off the top. It does make me want to watch the film again, because it has been a while. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
But it's such a lovely... Like, see when we were walking through the city, me and my mate had to ban ourselves from saying, oh, this is nice.
I know.
Because it was just every street you went down, there was not like a bad area. And you sit there and go, what was Colin Farrell moaning about? This place is bloody wonderful.
I know. I think that's the thing is, if you moan, you're in Bruges and you're a seriously damaged person. It's like going to Venice. Every single street in Venice is like a work of art. Even the so-called seedier ends of Venice are just beautiful paintings. It's a... astonishing place, in Bruges is the same. It's wherever you sit in the square as well.
Yeah.
It just looks amazing.
Because there was at one point, we just jumped into this bar and then the snow came down and there was a big open fire and we were just sitting there going, I don't think
it doesn't get any
better. We don't need to move.
And then a waffle arrives and then a big, big old pint of
big
blonde
beers.
Beer. Blonde beer, which can do some serious damage.
I was drinking those Creek You know, it's like a sour beer, but it's cherry flavoured.
Oh, yes.
So good. I could just drink.
Kind of goes down like sweeties.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Then it goes down, you can't get up.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when you're sitting there just looking at the snow. And then that, and then you go, like, Mom, we'll go to actually look at things. And then
Mom, we'll go to the tin shop.
But it was very good. So you were saying, so do you go to quite a lot of films then?
I don't get, I've got three kids, so it's rare that I'll go and see like a non-animated film like en masse. But what I am is a member of BAFTA. Mm-hmm. So I get to be one of the many, many, many judges, but they send you
like preview DVDs. The screeners?
Screeners. So it's just great. It's because I don't always get out to the cinema, and not nearly as much as I'd like to. Plus, I think cinema's been devalued because of so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the amount of Marvel and superhero films that are out now. Now, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination a geek in the sense that I like them from a distance. I'm not completely ensconced in them, but I like them for what they are. But at one point I thought, I'm overkill. I feel like there's too many. And then I watched Thor Ragnarok and my faith was restored.
That was fantastic.
It was really
it
was proper laugh out loud.
It was just so unexpected. Like out of all the sort of Avenger solo films, I think Thor's were always the kind of the weak link in the chain.
Yeah.
However, that was amazing. And Taika Waititi done a brilliant job.
Oh, he's a genius, isn't he? Do you know, I still haven't seen the Wildebeest thing. I've still not. What's it called again?
I've not even seen that myself.
I've not seen that. That's on my to-do list. Oh, that's the problem. The to-do list is so long.
Yeah.
There's so many films that I haven't seen because there's too many of them.
And then you see a film, you go, I need to watch more of his films, and then it just adds to the list.
Well, when I was a kid, I was just thinking about this when I was about 12 or 13 years old, maybe even 15, 16 years old. There's maybe only four must-see films a year, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like 30 or something. So you just don't get around to it, you know, unless you are, I'm married with kids, so I've got other commitments. So it's just difficult. You don't get to see everything, and then you feel that you're missing out. And then that's before you start on the box sets and you have the box set conversation.
Oh, I know.
You know, I haven't seen a single Sons of Anarchy.
You've not seen Sons of Anarchy?
Well, because it's too many horses to back. You know what I mean? I was on the Breaking Bad horse and the Wire horse, and then, you know, I missed out on the West Wing, and then I haven't seen a single Sopranos. But, you know,
I haven't seen a single
Walking Dead. Apparently, Naveed's in Walking Dead. People keep tweeting me pictures of Andrew Lincoln.
Oh, really?
And Lincoln's character waking up from a coma and looking like Naveed, which is a horrible thing to wake up and look like a shopkeeper without actually having curly wellies at all. There's at the minute now, what I have been watching is Derry Girls, which is...
See, I've seen the first episode. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the rest of them yet, but
it's very funny.
I am really liking it.
It's got a really nice energy about it, and I think the use of music actually is very good because it's clearly, like, totally bang in the 90s. And it's really nice writing, great performances. I mean, the casting's been genius, I think, to find those four relatively unknown actresses. And they're all brilliant in their own way. The other thing I've been watching is, I quite like some of the... Again, there isn't enough time to watch all of them, but I've been enjoying The Bridge and The Tunnel. So there's a new... I get them mixed up now. It's the new Tunnel, which is the French Anglo drama. That's really good. But there's you know, McMafia, everyone's banging on about that. I've not seen that.
I watched the first two episodes. I think everybody in Scotland watched it thinking it was going to be a Scottish gangster drama, but it's not. It's about the kind of the Russians.
Yeah.
But it is really interesting. It's really good. And you were saying about The Walking Dead.
Mm.
The Walking Dead's one of those things that you can only binge watch. See, if you're watching it once a week, a lot of nothing happens in quite a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
But see, if you're binging it, you don't really notice because you're just constantly watching stuff.
But then the danger of the binge watches, and this happened with me with The Wire, was when I was slightly underemployed, about 3 or 4 years ago, I did during the day, I was binge watching The Wire, and you really, really, you go deep and you get into the language. And this actually happened. My daughter, who would have been, she's 16 now, so she would have been probably about 10 or 11 at the time, she was pouring herself out some sugar puffs, and I fancied some sugar puffs, and I had to stop myself from saying, could you hook a brother up to my own daughter? Can I have a re-up on the sugar puffs? So you need to be careful when you're binge-watching. Mm-hmm. You might turn into a zombie.
But you were talking about like the music that was in Derry Girls, and I'm quite liking that trend in TV and film now where everything's kind of nostalgia-based, 80s, 90s. You've got Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
End of the Fucking World, that was brilliant. That was
which I never saw. Well, good,
that was on Channel 4 originally. It's now on Netflix. It's really good.
Yeah.
and even like Atomic Blonde in the cinema. That was one of my top films of last year.
I've not seen that as well. I've not seen that either.
There's nothing not to like about that film. The music's in it's brilliant. The action in it's brilliant. And then, and the director of that, David Leitch, he's going to direct a new Deadpool film.
Oh, I cannot Deadpool. Wait for that. Oh, Deadpool. That was an eye opener as well. Mm-hmm. The funniest. One of the funniest films I've seen, but the funniest opening I've seen.
Yeah.
Just the credits were just genius. Asshat. It's a word you don't hear nearly enough of. So he's doing the new Deadpool then?
Yeah, he's doing the new Deadpool. So he co-directed the John Wick films as well.
Right, which I've not seen.
Well, what's good about them is they're always quite low budget and they work to a lower budget. And that's what the first Deadpool was.
Yeah.
And I think that's why... who directed the first Deadpool film? Is it... Paul, you know that. Tim Miller.
Uh-huh.
He was the reason why they think he got kicked off was he was asking for more and more money. He's like, I've made all this money, but they were kind of wanting to keep it small.
Well,
David Leitch is probably the perfect person for that.
Well, I have found with a lot of those films that it's almost like it's arse over tit. It's not the plot should, or rather, I should say that the effects should serve the plot, not the other way around. And you find increasingly that the plot is like the fifth consideration, or rather the dialogue. I mean, the dialogue in Deadpool is just so on point. It's a bit like Robert Downey Jr. Superhero
Iron Man.
Iron Man, thank you.
Yeah.
First Iron Man, which the way he describes it was that they arrived on set. It was him and it was Jeff Bridges and who else was in it? Who else was in that film?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Thank you. They sort of arrived and it was a big budget film, but there was something happened. There was no script. So they kind of had to semi-improvise a script in their trailers. And you can totally tell. You can totally tell. Because the dialogue is proper, crackling, funny. Same as Deadpool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think sometimes when a budget... I mean, I've had experience of this myself. I worked on a show years ago. It'd been a Radio Scotland show. It was called Shredded Week. Mm-hmm. So the idea was it was a listening show, but actually it was a sketch show because... The idea of the show was that we would recommend a film, we'd recommend a theatre production, we'd recommend a book, we'd do a soaps roundup, but we'd do it all in character.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's two Neds doing a review of a theatre. Now, this is kind of before Neds hadn't really been done properly at that point, so it was me and Donnie McCleary, who I write Fags, Mags and Bags with, we wrote and presented and acted the show and... So it's two Neds. We'd review. Actually, we've been doing a Torn Theatre in Glasgow to review our Bad Magna, a Toilet's All Magnificent. And then Donnie would be Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars and do a soaps roundup. And on Hollyoaks, wipe them out, all of them. But you'd do a genuine soaps roundup because we would have the listings on Radio Times. And on Coronation Street, Tyrone. Oh, who gives a bugger about Tyrone? Fat ride. Donnie's much better than
that. See, you should do that now with River City and you being in it.
I know, that would be a bit meta, wouldn't it? Yeah. Aye. Review it as Naveed, as myself. that would be a bit weird. No, my cup of tea. Who's that Asian big bloody lump of wood? What are you doing? So it started as a Radio Scotland show and then it became a digital thing on what was then called BBC Choice Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And we were given like a micro budget to do it, but that was part of the charm of it. Because like we were doing all the makeup and the costumes ourselves, we were going to Tam Shepherd's and we were having a laugh, and then we got a slightly bigger budget to do the second series, and that's when they brought in a costume department, and that's when they brought in a makeup department, and then it just lost its focus a wee bit. So I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's almost. I mean, I always say this. Sometimes it's easier to park between two cars than it is to park in an empty car park. If you can work, if you're given limitations and you're creative enough, then you will find a way. And actually. You know, when you're forced in that corner, you're forced to get creative. And sometimes when you throw money at something, it's not the best idea. So, but Deadpool was a revelation.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what to think before I went in it. I didn't really know what to make of Ryan Reynolds. Because I think that was before the Virgin ads that he did. And he's proper funny in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell he's a funny, funny man, but I wasn't aware of his kind of comedic sensibilities before that. It's annoying though that someone so handsome and so, you know, pumped him and the bloody what's his face from Ghostbusters and Thor.
Chris Hemsworth.
Irritating that they've got a sense of humour as well.
Yeah,
it's like, can you not leave something for the uglies? I do like though that you know when humour is that high in the mix, it's really refreshing.
Ryan Reynolds is very good at doing his own jokes. So when he starts doing jokes that people have written for him, I think that's where, because I think like he was very passionate about Deadpool. He always wanted to play Deadpool, and then he played him in the Wolverine Origins film, which they just completely wrecked because they sewed up his mouth and he couldn't talk. And you're like, what's the point?
What's the point?
But like, I love the Wham jokes and the George Michael jokes that appear in the film, because growing up, my mom's a massive George Michael fan. It's all I heard growing up. Like, you used to try to go to your bed and you would hear bloody "Let's Go Outside" and all that kind of thing. Yeah. And like, as soon as the first Wham joke hit, I was loving it, because one of the Deadpool comics, like one of the first ones I read, he's like lying in a... he's like sleeping on a park bench, and like a hand comes over and he goes, "Oh, I know this situation," and he turns around and goes, "Oh, you're not the guy for Wham." But you mentioned Fags, Mags and Bags. Saw they're up for you're up for a comedy award.
Yeah, it's a website. I
voted in this morning.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Who do you vote for?
You.
I was going to say, I voted for Ed Reardon's Week. It's British Comedy Guide. It's a website, and I don't know how big or small it is, but they've been quite nice to us. They interviewed, I think they liked the show, and they interviewed us about it. And the shortlist that we're on is a very nice company to be in, because we're there with Count Arthur Strong and John Finnemore, who's a very very, very talented writer, and Ed Reardon's Week, and I think, is it Cabin Pressure? Is that on there as well?
I think it is, yeah.
These are the ones that are considered to be the better ones, so it's nice to be in that company. We won't win it, though. John Finnemore will win it. He wins everything, because he also writes, he does his own sketch show, and he writes Cabin Pressure, so either one of them will win it,
I think. But you have a big following, and you have retweeted it, so...
Yeah, I know, but then are people going to be like, aye, very good, you know, like bigging yourself up, you know, in that kind of Scottish way, aye, you know, we'll be the judge of that. Don't you?
I think with certain people, but not with yourself. I think you've passed that.
I hope so, because I mean, I've kind of like totally hammered my Twitter presence. I mean, I use it as a way to exercise my own brain, and I will do really tortuous puns and...
I like the Jesus one from earlier.
What was that one? Oh, the toast one.
You saw toast on the face of Jesus.
Yeah. Very simple rehearsal gag. But I what I do is, if once I had a sizable following, I thought, well, now I've earned the right to maybe occasionally plug stuff I'm doing. Because you get people that just plug the stuff they're doing, and it's like, well, you haven't really earned the right to do that, because that's all you've done. Whereas I like to think that, you know, you might like or hate my jokes, but at least I made an effort. And so I kind of feel in that kind of Calvinist Presbyterian way that I've earned the right to say, oh, by the way, if you like this, you might like that. So that's been good. Let's see what the Twitter effect has. If this will be the first experiment.
Yeah.
If Fags, Mags and Bags wins this award, then I'll know that those years of crafting really, really unwieldy puns has actually paid off.
Yeah. And as long as you plug yourself when you're on this show, then that's all cool.
Or I could plug, you know, Ed Reardon's Week. I could do that. No, I won't do that. Vote for Fags, Bags and Bags there, I've said it.
We'll put the link up in the thing, and we'll retweet it on Twitter as well.
Do that.
Yeah. So, we were talking about film. Are you a big Kevin Smith fan?
Yeah.
Because I've not seen Shooting Clerks. I've seen the Jason Mewes ones, Get Greedo.
Yeah, which I've not seen.
Which is good. Wow. And I was looking through your IMDb, and I was just like, oh, right, I know that. And then that was one that shot up, and I was like, how are you in that? So how did that come about?
They just approached me. They're based in Scotland, Dundee. And I don't actually know if they're based in Dundee, but that was where they filmed it, certainly. And they said, look, we're making this film about how Clerks was made. And I never know whether to call it Clerks because we're here, or whether to call it Clerks because that's what Kevin Smith would call it. Clerks was, because that was, what, 93, 94. I watched that before I was even in the media. And I just remember watching it and thinking, that feels like the sort of thing I would like to do. But this was before I even thought I'd be doing this for a living, sort of thing. But just, I loved how very low-key it was. Like, I watched it with a mate, and he didn't like it. He said, nothing really happened there. I said, no, everything happened. I mean, he had a story arc.
Yeah.
He did. It felt like nothing happened, but that's the beauty of it. It's a bit like Seinfeld. It's nothing, but it's everything. I really liked how it was pitched. And then you find out later, we'll talk about limitations, how they had to film at night, and that's why the shutter was down. And you'd never think that when you watched it the first time.
And how he chose the black and white just because it was cheaper.
Yeah, and yet and that, it worked so that well. Really made it work, didn't it? I mean, it did. It in that bizarre way, what is that thing that kicks in your brain when you see something in black and white and you immediately think it's harder than it maybe should be?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's also a potty mouth film.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Is
it Randall? Is it Randall?
Yeah.
His like, dialogue is just fantastic.
And it was really kind of... the dialogue was really out there. It seemed to... I think it preempted or actually started a genre of films where it was really kind of foul language, but mm-hmm. without the wit. I mean, it was the wit and the heart, actually. Because mm-hmm. Kevin Smith has got a big heart, I think. And great film. So these guys approached me and they said, would you be up for being in this film? I said, well, absolutely. Big Kevin Smith fan. And they were filming it in Dundee, so it was just like a train ride away. So
I didn't know they were Scottish. I thought it was American.
No, they're Scottish.
Oh, really?
They've had some kind of backing from Kevin Smith. I've noticed he's retweeted things.
Because he's on their IMDb as well. Like, is he not in it?
See, I don't know if he's... Is he in it? I've not seen it.
Or maybe they filmed bits in America and... I don't know. Because he's got a character's name on it.
I literally just did my bit and then I've not seen it. And then,
it does say on your trivia thing that you've done it in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I quite liked the bit is you got the option of who you wanted to play and you chose the person that you played and the other person ended up getting written out the script.
Did I get a choice?
That's what it says on IMDb, unless they're liars.
I've got some.
Apparently it was the character you chose, I can't remember his name.
Is he Dr. Jared Patel?
Yes, I think that's right.
And he's a lecturer.
And it said I had the choice between him or the quick stop manager.
Oh.
And you chose...
Maybe I did. Maybe I did then. Maybe I thought to myself, it might be an idea not to be another shopkeeper because mm-hmm. I'm so many shopkeepers. Yeah. Do you know what? That's probably true, but I'd just forgotten. But what was really cool about the job was they had, it was a very low budget production, but they gave me this jumper and to wear as a character, and it was this kind of V-neck with cream and black bits, and the producer said my gran knitted that for this, and then after the scene said, do you know what it is? Do you know what it represents? It was meant to be a stormtrooper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what it was. It's obviously he was channeling Kevin Smith's obsession with Star Wars.
I'm going to need to watch it and then go look out for that jumper.
But the thing is, I wear that jumper in the house now because it's been freezing. And my daughter wears it now. So, yeah, it's like a knitted stormtrooper, kind of. It's more impressionistic. You wouldn't think stormtrooper. But you'd give it some thought. Stormtrooper. It's more subtle than that.
Are you a fan of Star Wars yourself?
Yes.
Have you seen the new one?
Yes. Slightly too long, but I liked it.
Really?
Yeah, I did like it, actually. I thought... Which is difficult because... See, you're considerably younger than me. I'm 47, so I was 7 when A New Hope came out. Mm-hmm. So I felt that I put the time in. I saw Mark Hamill when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing Mark Hamill now when I'm 46.
Yeah.
So it was almost like, it's a strange one. He could have done anything, but the fact was he was there on that rock. And, yeah, it wasn't unflawed. But, put it this way, compared to, the Attack of the Clones and
it's better
Phantom Menace, which is just dreadful and racist and rubbish. all the baddies will be Japanese, I think, for no apparent reason. It much, much better than that. And then, by the third one of the second batch, when you see Peter Cushing at the end of the film, you think, we've earned that big, massive jigsaw going in to its piece. And then the one since then, I've enjoyed, I have to say.
See, I really liked Force Awakens. I did like Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And I really liked, what was the one in the middle?
The one that isn't on the timeline?
Yeah, Gareth Edwards' film.
Rogue One.
I thought that was brilliant. That was probably one of my favourites to go back and watch. However, I just couldn't connect with this one. I thought they were trying to make it too funny. Like, the jokes...
I know what you
the
mean.
The jokes were kind of missing. And I think they're wasting the character of Finn. Because it just gets to the point where it annoys me now. Because all he does is ask questions. There's no other point to him than helping explain things to the audience. Because he'll just go, oh, what's that?
You're
like, oh, come on, you should know by now. This is the second film. Come on, you've learnt something.
Yeah.
And then what also annoyed me was, like, see the woman that comes in to replace Princess Leia after she does her mad...
Yeah.
Whatever that was.
That thing where she went through space. Yeah.
Which is weird itself.
That was odd. That was odd.
And then she came out and then she didn't tell anybody our plan, even though our plan was a good one.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, she's going to kill us all and cost Poe Dameron to go and do his mad crazy thing, which then get them caught. And then that guy betrayed them. And then everybody, like loads of people died on the way, spaceships getting blown up and stuff. And all she needed to do is tell Poe Dameron and go, oh, there's a secret station over there that we're going to, don't worry. And then that would have been that.
Yeah, true. But I, I, what I should have said was I've got a really bad habit of falling asleep in the cinema.
Oh.
I do. So I just always assume that there was something I missed or... Cause I do. It doesn't matter how good the film is. Yeah. I fell asleep during... what do you call it? Kevin Costner, Robert... The De Niro film about... The Untouchables.
Right.
I fell asleep during the bit where Robert De Niro actually batters someone with a baseball bat. So it's nothing to do with what I'm watching. It's just that I have this thing where if I'm in a dark room and it's comfy, I'll nod off. So I've only stayed awake during two or three films in the last 10 years. So I'll miss five. I fell asleep during Blade Runner.
And the new one or the old
new
one?
The new one.
Oh, I've not seen the new one yet.
It's really good. The sound is astonishing. The sound is amazing. That will win an Oscar for the sound design, I think. Apart from anything else. I mean, again, maybe slightly too long, but really good, I think. I fell asleep, and you can't fall asleep during a film like that because, you know, there are certain films which will lead you by the nose. This is happening, that is happening. There are certain films that will do the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. And if you miss a beat, you are humped. So if you, like me, and you fall asleep for even 5 minutes, you're humped. You're in Siberia, you don't know what's going on. So, yeah, I probably can't pick holes and can't really review films because I didn't see the whole thing.
You didn't see the whole thing.
And also, I'm not going to give, like you did, I'm never going to give Carrie Fisher a bad review.
No. I don't understand the decision that the director made for that. Yeah, that was a very strange
Nicely
thing
played.
To happen.
Yeah, no, it was. It was quite a weird thing. And like, I did, and I was awake for that bit, so yeah.
Because no, I don't think anybody's used the force like that. Like, yeah. And then all of a sudden...
Which was the... was it the Attack of the Clones when they decided that the force was something in your blood?
Yeah, it was midichlorians.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know.
So just take the word mitochondrian and change it slightly.
I don't know what that word is. But.
Mitochondrion. Oh, well, because I've been doing higher biology with my daughter. Oh. So it's part of the molecular level of the cell. I won't bore you anymore. So that was like, oh, come on now. Because the force was a beautiful concept.
Yeah.
You don't need to physicalize it. Because that was the beautiful metaphor of Star Wars.
It's just the over-explanation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was like, oh, come on, but behave yourself. Mm-hmm. So when Leah did that thing when she went to space like that, I thought, okay, now we're getting back to the mystical, getting back to the more ninja, which is what it should be. None of your that thing you said, mitochondria thing,
metachlorians.
Thank you. Yeah.
Have they written that out yet? I think they were trying to get that out of canon, but I don't know if that's.
Well, actually, go back and cut it out.
Oh no, I don't know if cut out. Well, so going George Lucas, he probably would, but I'm pretty sure they're trying. Were they trying to say that metachlorians? Oh, Paul's nodding. Yeah. He's wearing a Star Wars T-shirt. He knows.
And what was it? With Samuel L. Jackson as well? What was his character called?
Mace Windu.
Yeah. Thank you. Actually, I should know this stuff. But does he not say at one point it's. It's party time or something.
Oh, does he?
Mate, come on. Someone have a word to Samuel L. He can't even do that in every film he's in. Come on, he's a Jedi.
He was told he wasn't allowed to say motherfucker, so he went, no, I'm going to say party time then.
He could have done the mitochondrion thing and changed it.
It's the motherfuckers in your blood.
Mother mucker. There were some bang wrong notes in those, the first two.
Especially
in the reboot.
He's talking about sand.
What was that again?
Well, it's like Anakin, and he's talking about, he's going, I hate sand, it's so coarse, and all that.
And that incredibly homoerotic bit where Hayden Christensen's having a nightmare, and he's kind of topless in his bed, and you're thinking, how many times George Lucas orgasmed to that? Oh my God.
That kind of happens in the new one as well, when like Rey and, what'd you call him?
Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
When they're doing that kind of, Jedi's FaceTime kind
of
thing.
Oh, right, yes.
And
then
he's got his top off, and you're just like,
this seems really weird.
Yeah.
But you do know that weird way, especially in the current climate, you think, well, I'd rather it was a guy with his top off. Because do you know what I mean? But it shouldn't be anyone, you know, in an ideal world. It's like, what are the plot reasons for him having his top off?
Absolutely none.
I was fixing the boiler. I mean, give us a reason at least. Come on now.
Because she even says, can you put like a top on or something? It's like not only do we have to see it, you're having to point out the fact that we can see it just in case you missed it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to put that top on. But we'll kind of steer away from films, and it would be hard not to have you on and not talk about Still Game.
Yeah.
And of course, there was the 9-year gap between the last series and the one that happened last year, 2016?
It was last year, wasn't it? Well, 2016, because I still think it's 2017. It was 2016, yeah.
Yeah. So was it good getting back into character and seeing everybody again?
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, it felt like it'd never gone, because in as much as we stopped making them in 2007 or 2008 or whatever, in that interim time, YouTube kicked up, and then Netflix. So in the public consciousness, I never felt that it went away. Certainly in the public's reaction, it never went away. And people were constantly, on a nearly daily basis, someone would say, usually a taxi driver would say, Connie, knock those boys' heads together and get them to write more. But they were just watching the old ones anyway. Mm-hmm. So, and it seemed to be like a new generation of kids as well that maybe weren't quite old enough to watch it the first time and were now catching up with it. Yeah. So if anything, in a bizarre way, it gained popularity.
Mm.
And what that meant was, because I mean, I've said this in print before, I had a theory it would come back. I've got this thing about 10 years, like bands especially, what happens is they tootle along, not making a living, but loving their life, because mm-hmm. they're kind of living the dream, but they're eating, you know, tins of baked beans. And then they get a bit of recognition, and then they hit that sweet spot where they're still doing what they love, making enough money so it's washing its own face, but it's still fun. And then you get a bit more success, you're on that upward gradient, and you start to feel the pressure, you know, getting pressures from outside sources. It's not fun anymore, it's like work now. And you keep going up, and as much as the outside world thinking they must be really happy, they're successful, and they're doing something they've created,
mm-hmm.
it stopped being fun a long time ago. Happens with bands all the time. Then they split up. It all becomes acrimonious. They travel in separate jets. I'm not suggesting that Ford and Greg had separate jets. And within 10 years, and this is the way that, you know, nostalgia works, that you know, mind works, you begin to remember the good stuff. And then, you know, time, just as a function of time, you think, well, we should be doing that again. So I did think it would come back. I didn't think it would be a live show. I mean, I remember when Greg stays over the road from me, and he rang the bell and he said, just to let you know, Sanj, you know, you'll be getting a call from your agent, but we're going to do a show at the Hydro. And I went, I did a proper Scooby-Doo. And that was weird. And that was a mental time in my life, because so that was then publicised that we were going to be live at the Hydro. And already at that point, I'm thinking, how the hell does that work? Because how do you do narrative comedy in an arena that size? Because the closest any of us could equate was Panto.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking places like the King's Theatre or the Pavilion or the King's in Edinburgh. And, you know, the maximum kind of capacity for those venues is like 1,500. You're talking about 10,000, 11,000 seats here. How do you do narrative comedy? Who's going to see it? Is it going to be screens? Are we going to be mic'd up? Do we play it out? Do we play it in? And I'd done very little. In fact, I'd done nearly zero live theatre work. I mean, all the rest of the cast were like seasoned professionals. They'd done panto, they'd done theatre. I'd done nothing. So in a sense, it made it easier for me because I didn't know what I was scared of. Again, I just go into Scooby-Doo mode. So this is happening. Okay, so that's, was this happening? What's happening? Whereas, you know, like Jane and Gav and Paul and Mark, and we'd get together and they'd say, see, the thing is, when I play the Kings, I know how the audience behaves. It's like a wave of laughter, and then you can ride that wave. But how's it going to work in the Hydro? Number one, are they going to laugh at all? Will they hear us?
Mm-hmm.
Will it be too cavernous? Because sound is very important. I mean, I've died enough deaths doing after dinner to know that if they can't hear you, then you're screwed. Yeah. Or even if you sound slightly muted, then it loses its impact. So number one, will they get the sound right? And then also, are we going to get patches of laughter, or is it going to be one big laugh? And if it is patches of laughter, how do we cope with that? How do we ride that? It's not going to be a big wave of laughter. So we didn't really know until we'd done the first show how it was going to behave. Thankfully, it did behave. But we'd been contracted initially to do four shows.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it was. It was going to be four shows. And if they sold out, we would add another one. And so we had a press conference in an empty Hydro to basically publicise the ticket sale. So we all showed up, and they sent around stretch limos to pick us up. It was a bit weird. And then we get taken to the Hydro, and we walked through an empty Hydro to get to the kind of conference room where they're going to have the press conference. So we're walking through this empty Hydro. I'm just looking up at the ceiling and thinking, we're not going to sell this out once. Who is anyone kidding? you could play cricket here, the ball wouldn't touch the ceiling. So then we went and we did the press conference, and that was a bit weird as well, because it was like every camera in Scotland seemed to be there from every newsroom and every paper, and it felt like Tyson Holyfield or something. And then we did the press conference, and that was on a Wednesday, and that was to say that tickets go on official sale on Friday, but there's a pre-sale, but officially Friday's the day to, you know, to get on your computer sort of thing. And then someone texted me on the Thursday and said, got my tickets, and sent me a wee screen grab. I thought, oh, well, how did you get your tickets? Pre-sale. Then later that day, sold out on the pre-sale, yeah. And apparently the internet broke, and they started just putting on two shows, then two shows, then two shows, then two shows, then two shows. I thought, what is going on here? But then when you unpick it, you think, well, it makes a lot of sense, because people were waiting for New Steel Game. It is kind of Scotland's sitcom. They feel like they own it in a good way. It hadn't been on for years. I mean, Ford and Greg were a bit like Gary Barlow and Robbie Williams, sort of. It was also 2014. I mean, the live show started the day after the independence vote.
Oh.
And it was also the year of the Glasgow Commonwealth. So it was loads of planets were aligning. It was kind of still games time. And the hydro wasn't long out of the packet as well. So that was another thing to add to the mix. So I think that combination of elements made it the kind of ticket sales phenomenon that it was. And then, of course, the worry is, well, how do we justify,
yeah,
you know, selling these many tickets? And you're hearing horrible stories about people taking out payday loans to get tickets. And, oh, don't do that. Because, oh, I mean, you know, we have no control over how much the tickets cost. And God knows we have no control over the touts, who I'd happily stab in the face. Oh, my God, when are they going to get sorted?
I know.
It's
like Ticketmaster as well have got their own like resale website, like, and it's just as bad. It's like you're looking at that and then you've got to pay all the extra fees and everything.
It's ridiculous. Like, what was I trying to buy tickets for the other day and I just did, no, I'm not doing it, because the markup was something like 50 quid in the end.
Jesus,
not doing that. I mean, I like Escop 7, but I'm not paying an extra 50 quid, and it wasn't even the originals. So then the worry is, are we going to give them a show that's worth it? And I think we did. I mean, given the reaction, you know, I think that we did manage it. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the live show the first time around.
I saw it on TV. I never actually got to see it.
Unfortunately, if you saw the version the BBC put out, it was an hour's edit, but there wasn't a clean hour's edit to take from that show.
Okay.
It was ugly, and the sound was dreadful. If you got watched the actual DVD, you'd have a much better idea of what the show was, because also there was a whole bunch of kind of breaking the fourth wall stuff, which they had to cut for the TV version because it was an hour slot. But like I say, you couldn't get an elegant hour. It was just clunky. It was just ugly. And you missed all the kind of fun stuff where we're playing with the audience. I mean, at one point, Naveed is out in the audience selling hot dogs.
I didn't see that.
Selling binoculars to the tightwads at the back sort of thing. So there's a lot of fun stuff that you missed out. But the kind of culmination of the show is that, for anyone that hasn't seen it, is that Isa has been picking mushrooms and making soup. So, you know, and we're very kind of knowing about it. It says, mushrooms, I picked myself from the graveyard in October, wank. So, you know, there's something vaguely hallucinogenic.
That is a perfect body.
I spent plenty of time with Jamie Curry. She does a very good Naveed. So you know there's something hallucinogenic is going to happen, but what you don't know is it's going to be a big Bollywood dance-off with 12 dancers. So the way it works is there's a big scene in the pub, and then I leave, and I have to do the quickest costume change in theatre history to get into this Bollywood outfit, because then when that scene in the pub ends, Isa starts tripping, and then the pub disappears, and then these glittery stairs come forward and I'm on it in full Bollywood outfit and sing this song. So from my perspective, 21 times I saw this, because that's how many shows there were, I can see 10,000 people, 20,000 eyes going, bunk, like turning at dinner plates like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I expected something, Janice, but not Bollywood. So it was, I got that unique view every night. And that was fun just to see that. Because they really aren't expecting that.
Yeah.
And then we got a standing ovation the first night, and then we got one every night, which was magic.
I was going to say as well, because you got the big Bollywood scene.
I got the big Bollywood
scene. And you're hoisted up as well.
And I had my own dancers. I mean, that'll never happen again. So, you know, I was trying to enjoy that moment. but then you get blasé about it, because I think 5 or 6 nights in, it was an evening show, because we did some matinees, but it was an evening show. And so usually we did the show, and then there was like an hour afterwards where you went, there was a kind of an after party. I mean, that's glorifying it. It was this kind of dungeon in the hydro. And there was like a couple of warm Budweisers and some some cheesy waltzes, and but all your pals that had come to see the show and family and all that were there, yeah. And the occasional footballer and wrestler. And Stan Lee came one night.
Oh, really?
No, not really. Oh. But, you know, I thought that was... No, sadly not. Do you know, Peter Kay came.
Did he?
Peter Kay came to see the show, and he loved it. Kevin Bridges came as well.
Because Still Game's kind of like that. Like, not a lot of English people watch it, but I find you find a lot of English comedians watch it. And a lot of...
Phil Jupitus came to the second one. He's a massive fan. I think Jason Manford's a fan, I think. He mentioned it apropos of nothing on some show he was on. So I think it is a bit like the Cognoscenti seem to like it, which is lovely. I mean, I've always, because I've been such a huge comedy fan since I was like 7 years old, I've always sought the approval of people in the business. And like, for example, I was the very, very fortunate chance to spend time with Amanda Iannucci at the Scottish BAFTAs.
Oh, nice.
And I was... trying really subtly and then not so subtly to get his opinion on Vags, Mags and Bags. His brother was a massive fan. Uh-huh. So his brother's chatting away to me. And I'm saying, what's that, David? What was that, David? Amanda, no, nothing. Nothing. I didn't find out. So it is always nice, I have to say, to get approval from people that you like. It just is. So it was about six nights in and... So I'd been to the after party thing and then I went home. I got in about 11:30 and my Mrs. Fiona was up watching something and she said, oh, how'd it go tonight? I said, yeah, another standing ovation. I got some green top milk for the cereal in the morning. She said, what's the matter with you? I said, well, you know, it's... What? I said, well, how can you do? How can you come down from a standing ovation? Well, we've had five now. You know, the kids... Because people say as well, how was the tour? It wasn't a tour.
Yeah, it was on the...
It was in the Hydro, which is 15 minutes from my house. So I'm still doing the school run in the morning. And, you know, I've always said that about Glasgow and the West of Scotland generally, is you can't get a too big for your boots here because people won't let you.
Yeah.
You know, I do this joke, which if in this town you say, do you know who I am? Someone will say, why have you got Alzheimer's? You know, you can't get away with that chat here.
That is
and
true.
Thank God you can't, you know, because I think people go over the top and they start, you know, like kind of being a bit mealy mouthed about people that, like Billy Connolly, for example. I well seen he moved away when he made some money. Well, of course he did. Where the shite you? You know, as rich as he is, he can't commission a massive magnet to bring the sun closer to Partick.
No.
So he goes to where the sun is. It doesn't mean that he sold us out. He's still being Scottish on the world stage. So, you know, dry your eyes. It can be a bit over the top, but I think generally it's a kind of mostly healthy trait that we have here that, you know, I ken your father. Just calm yourself, Gerard Butler. The word's premier, not premier.
Yeah.
Right? And he's a Paisley boy.
I know, and he was done for me the moment he played a charity match. I can't remember who it was for, and we were speaking to him, and like after he was substituted, he was like, oh, yeah, I'm a big Celtic fan. I used to be a St Mirren fan, but then I saw the light and I thought, no, that's me. You're done for me. That's it. I will not enjoy another thing you are in.
Well, did he call it football or soccer?
Oh, no, I think he said football. I think it was football.
Did he?
Yeah.
Here's a trivia question. Do you know why American football, why they call it football, even though they hardly kick it?
No.
Because the ball's a foot long.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, foot to ball.
I didn't know.
And the World Series is called the World Series because it was sponsored by the World newspaper.
Oh, okay.
So everyone thinks it's American arrogance.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's Cuban and Japanese baseball teams.
Yeah.
Why don't they get a shout? Well, it was.
Well, I was well under the impression that was the case.
Do you know why Great Britain's called Great Britain?
I do not.
Grande Bretagne, Great Brittany. It was the weather was like Brittany in the north of France. So Great Britain was like a large Brittany. So it isn't actually about Britain being great, despite what arseholes like Farage might promote, but it's actually about being a large Britain. I'm full of these facts.
See, you learn something every day.
You learned three. That was three in one there.
I know.
That was like a fruit. That was like a cake of information there. I feel like I'm like unusually pure heroin. I've given you too much at once, and then
not in Paisley, don't worry.
It's not unusually pure here. Cut with him, Jeff.
So how many live shows did you end up doing in the end in that run?
In that first run, we did 21.
21?
21. Oh. I really enjoyed it, though. And I didn't... We did all the shows, and I never felt at any point I wanted it to end. I mean, because it was so surreal. And then the bizarre thing was that I had agreed to do this thing. A friend of mine had approached me... She said, how would you feel about trying to learn Gaelic to enough Gaelic to present a radio show on the BBC's Gaelic station?
Yeah.
And I thought I quite liked that challenge because I was good at languages at school and I've got quite lazy in terms of I only really learn to do something if it's for a job, you know, rather than actually do it for the bettering of myself. So that sounds like quite a good thing. And also my missus is second generation Stornoway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my kids, they're kind of half second generation Punjabi, Indian, Sikh and half Lewis Stornoway kind of. But the Punjabi is terrible and the Gaelic is terrible because my Punjabi is shocking and Fiona's Gaelic is shocking. So I thought it might be a nice way to sort of connect them to one of their kind of father, mother cultures. So I thought, oh, that sounds like a laugh. And so I went straight from doing the first live run to then going with Fiona and the kids because it's October week off school as well. We went to Lewis and I had some filming days doing this thing and trying to learn Gaelic. And that was a mistake because about 3 days into that, I just felt like it hit me like jet lag.
Oh, really?
I hadn't really processed it all. And 3 days into that, I was like a shell. But the experience was amazing. And weirdly, it kind of felt like it never happened at all because a few months after that, I was driving up the expressway and I'm up and down the road all the time. So I see the hydro all the time. And I was, so that's the other thing is it's just there. Mm-hmm. So you kind of don't really process it. And I was driving past it and I absently said to the people in the car, I played that. But here's the thing, there was no one else in the car. So that was me being a dick. But that was,
I do the same thing. See if a band comes on that I've interviewed before in the past, they're like, I've interviewed them, and they're like, no one else is here.
Who's the best band you've interviewed then?
The best band I've interviewed?
Or your favourite band?
My favourite band's Blink. Never ever got to interview them. I came close once to interviewing Tom DeLonge, and he's a proper weirdo, so that would have been really, really good to do. And then, like, I got a text the next day saying, oh, it can't happen. I was like, raging. Chidi Bang was really good. Don't know if you know them. They're an American rapper and, like, DJ dude. But they were really good. My first ever interview with a band was Goldie Looking Chain.
Oh, wow.
And that, I was not ready for that. I was so unprepared, and I was just...
Was it Eggsy?
Eggsy was probably the more sensible one there.
Well, he's the one that did all the Talking Head shows for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. And like, it was Maggot. Uh-huh. He was out his face. Like, it was in Bristol.
Uh-huh.
And we get led up these stairs, and he was there wearing a fur hat, big fur hat. And he just like kind of looked at me and went, oh, all right. And then walked on. And I was just like, okay. And then there was this guy, Reese. It was Reese and Eggsy were the more sensible ones. But Reese had told me that. They were doing a signing session and signing all their CDs, and they signed like 50. Well, they were signing 100, and they'd get 50 in, and then realised they'd bought dry white markers, and you could wipe it all off. And I was like, that's got to be the most Goldie Looking Chain thing ever. And then they were throwing, like, you were trying to talk to them, and they were throwing, like, bags of peanuts at each other, and they were like, and it was like, just, they said usually they throw Pringles, but because they've got Guess, which was us, they would throw peanuts instead. And, what else happened? Then they ended up talking about dildos for about half an hour, and I was just like, okay. That was a very surreal experience.
Well, they've got to be due a reunion at some point.
Well, I think they're on their like 18th album or something. They brought out a song for the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
After the Brexit vote, and it was like, it was a parody of Dry Your Eyes, Mate by the Streets. And it was quite a good song, to be fair. It's like one of those ones when you haven't heard them in a while. Well, that's actually quite good. But yeah, they're in amongst everything. So that was definitely one of the weirdest, worst one I've ever done. Oh, should I mention it? Well, Newton Faulkner.
Really?
Yeah, he just wouldn't talk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, and it wasn't that. Like, I was supposed to be, like, the way the interview schedule was, somebody was in before me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was supposed to be in before this person, but they went ahead of me. And that lasted ages. And I think he just talked to her constantly. And then when I came in, I was like, so how's it going? He was like, yeah, not bad. And then, it was around about the time that, remember it, Coachella, and they put the Tupac hologram up.
Hologram,
and I was mentioning that to him, and he went, yeah, I was there, and I was with the guys who'd done the hologram. And I was like, oh, what was that like? He was like, yeah, it was quite cool. Like, oh my god, talk. But anyway, back to Still Game. So Series 8, is that out this year?
That was we recorded it was it July, August last year, and originally it was going to be broadcast November, December, but then that changed. I'm glad it did, actually, because had it gone out then, it would have been fighting every other Christmas special.
Yeah.
We'd have been buried in the schedules. We wouldn't have maybe got... Because when we came back in 2016, that was us back on the network. Now, we were on the network. People forget that we started on BBC Scotland, and then eventually the network said we can't ignore the show, and then they kind of apologetically buried in the schedules, which I think is a good thing, actually, because I think people don't like to be told what to laugh at. Mm-hmm. I think they'd rather find it and then tell their pals. So that's kind of how it worked with Still Game. Because I remember, I think when they started putting it on the network, they had this kind of 1.5 hour block of comedy on BBC Two. So the first half hour was Saxondale, mm-hmm. which was the new Steve Coogan vehicle time. Hey. The second half hour was Still Game, and then the third half hour was Catherine Tate. I think it was possibly a rerun of her sketch show. And all, I mean, understandably, all the press was for Steve Coogan's new vehicle, and I am a massive Steve Coogan fan. I'm a massive Steve Coogan fan. So I was primed to watch Saxondale myself. So I got it. Still Game was like just ignored. It was just thing that the Scots seemed to like it. And we kind of have to put it on because it's getting football-type viewing figures. Oh, and Catherine Tate. And then by the end of the run, I believe that Still Game was getting the highest viewing figures out of the three without any kind of PR or advertising. And I think that's because people just like to find stuff. Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, I think that worked for us. But then... then we obviously stopped making them. And then when we came back, it was in a prime slot. It was 9:30, BBC One now, because it had been BBC Two previously. In as much as that doesn't matter anymore because the whole scheduling thing has, you know, gone down the pan anyway. But it still means something. 9:30, BBC One, Friday nights. And in a sense, you could say that this was it actually kind of starting on the network. Do you know what I mean? Because there would have been people in Leamington Spa that didn't know what the Still Game thing was, and they probably thought, "Oh, is that Mrs. Brown's boys?" And yeah, I know. Don't stop me. So this series now, I felt was kind of will be cementing our new fans, because mm-hmm. we know we can't really do any more damage in Scotland. There's probably everyone watches it. I'm not being arrogant about that. That's just the feedback we get. Yeah. And I know that just from the number of people that shout at me from building sites and soft play areas and
just everywhere.
And yeah, and crematoria, which is the correct plural crematorium. So I felt that this series now will be the cementing of the first series. So I'm glad that it didn't get buried in the Christmas schedule. But they haven't said when exactly they are going to put it
out.
So we're now kicking the arse of February. They've still not told us.
Because... they were doing the Cineworld showings.
Yes. And did you come along to that?
I didn't. I've done the ballot and I didn't get in it.
I've been to every single one of those screenings, bar the last mm-hmm. two. So I've seen four of the six and they're really good. We've got Craig Ferguson.
Okay, yeah.
Formerly Bing Hitler, who I just a massive fan of. And he is a fan of the show and he said yes to doing a guest spot. So that's a really good one. It's just up to standard, I think. Last I heard, they were saying maybe March, April. Because it'll be a 6-week run, so it'll straddle 2 months. Mm-hmm. So I think March, April. But then, you know, I don't know. And people have been getting in touch with me on Twitter and saying, oh, come on, big man, play the game. Like I know, and I don't. I genuinely don't know when it's going out. In fact, when is this going out?
This will probably go out on Monday, which would...
So we'll still be in January then?
Yes, yes.
All right, okay, so it won't have been out by the time this goes out.
No.
I know that for a fact, cool. Yeah.
And probably we'll start wrapping things up, but one thing I was going to ask you about is, I don't know if you're aware of it, I'm pretty sure you are, about the documentary that was made in America about the problem with the poo.
Oh, yeah.
Harry, I'm going to pronounce this terribly, Harry Kondabolu.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was just because... he was on about how basically the representation of Indian characters mm-hmm. in the media and on TV, especially like at the time, I think the only representation of an Indian person was Apu.
Yeah.
And just to be his opinions on it, it's like he's getting some amount of hate for it. But I think he's got a good few points from what he said I've kind of agreed with. But
yeah. I mean, when I was approached to play Naveed, I didn't have a problem with it because I knew from the way it had been written...
Mm-hmm.
He was a very much three-dimensional character with his own, you know, like he was sarcastic, he was arrogant. And you could argue, oh, why is he a shopkeeper? Well, I can give you 10 reasons why a disproportionate number of businesses of that nature in this country are run by Asian people, because my dad did it, because my dad's a teacher, and my dad saw all his pals getting promoted, and he couldn't exactly pin the reason why that was, but he had his his suspicions. So you know, to me, it speaks of a very, very high work ethic. It speaks of people that aren't just going to sit down and just do nothing. It speaks of people. I mean, I've always said, if you want to see a snapshot of the kind of immigrant experience in Scotland or England, you go to a private school at pickup time and you see a shop van picking up the kids. That's parents working their asses off to give the kids an education. So I think these are positive things that we can, you know, it's a stereotype, but it's a positive one.
Yeah.
So I personally didn't have an issue. But having said that, though, I did worry about how the Asian community would react. Say, oh, there's one Scottish Asian on the telly and he's a shopkeeper. I've never really had any negative feedback. And the reason I think of that is because he is authentic.
Yeah.
The way that Ford and Greg have written him, and what I can bring to the party, which is I can do a governmental accent and I can impersonate my dad very well.
Yeah.
So any number of people have asked me if they or I based that character on their shopkeeper. And we haven't. I mean, it's just because it's written so well and because I know how to play that character, there's an authenticity there, which I think people recognise. Now, you look at Apu, the accent's wrong.
Yeah, well, he's voiced by Hank Azaria, who's not Indian.
My issue isn't that it's a white guy. Yeah. It's just wrong. I mean, Ford Kiernan can do a brilliant Glaswegian accent.
Yeah.
In fact, when Chewing the Fat was still on the go and I was writing for it, he was going to play an Asian shopkeeper and he said to me, will this be an issue? I said, no, because you've got the character bang on.
Yeah.
I'll help you with any dialogue that you need help him with. It never came to anything. People forget as well that Matt Lucas played an Asian shopkeeper in the first series of Little Britain. And it was a guy called Sunji. He says, all right, he's bang born, is it? He's going to have a bang later. And he got the accent bang on. It was like a Wembley Asian kind of Gujarati accent. So it's all about authenticity. And it's authentic to have an Asian guy running a 7-Eleven store in a neighbourhood like Springfield.
Yeah.
But the accent isn't right. Well, it's the only thing that's wrong with that, I think.
Well, that's what... I was listening to a podcast when he was on, and he was saying kind of like everyone's like passing the blame of where the accent came from. Like Hank Azaria said that he walked in and Matt Groening told him just to do the most offensive accent he can think of. and there's a video of him saying that at like a big talk kind of thing.
Oh, right.
However, Matt Groening says, no, it was never going to be an Indian. Hank Azaria just came out with this accent, so they're all kind of passing the buck a bit. But I can kind of see his point of certain things, and like I think he's sitting in a room with a bunch of other Indian comedians, and it's like, put your hands up if you've ever been called like a poo in the street. And you're like, yeah, that kind of thing. But then when you're saying about the difference between Naveed and the poo, like yours is a three-dimensional character, it's kind of like... Apu can be taken out the Simpsons and it'll still be the Simpsons.
Yeah.
But you couldn't take Naveed out of Still Game because it wouldn't be Still Game again.
Possibly, but then you look at the size of the ensemble in both. They're both ensemble comedies. Yeah. But The Simpsons is much, much bigger and has been going since 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So it's had to be by design, it's had to make that world bigger. And also they're both likable characters.
Yeah.
They're both positive characters, they're both successful characters. I mean, Naveed is the richest guy in Craig Lang. I remember when the episode, I can't remember what series it was, but it was when Naveed had to go away to his brother's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes round to Jack and Victor's to try and get them to run the shop. And I remember, I can't remember if it was Ford or Greg or Michael Hines, the director, said, when you go to the flat, prowl like a panther. You know what I mean? Because you're the cock of the scheme sort of thing. I don't mean that they are sort of the scheme, but they're kind of proud, you know. And I did. I sort of like walked about and started like my dad does. You'll flick a wall to if it's structural, you know. And you'll
that's kind of like what my brother does. My brother came up to mine when I first moved out of my flat, and he's looking about going.
It says everything about a person when they go into a new space like that, whether they're sort of timid or whether they're prowling about, touching things that aren't there.
Yeah.
So. I know from that Naveed is a positive, successful person. And Apu is, you know, he does all right. He isn't a victim. I mean, you look at early EastEnders, for example, the Asian families, they were forever getting bricks thrown through their windows and they were victims and they were ciphers. They were just victims. There wasn't much more to them. And I feel that we've evolved from that successfully with the likes of Naveed and Apu. But yeah, the accent is an issue, I have to say. And I'm a massive fan of The Simpsons. I think because I am such a huge fan of The Simpsons, I've let it go.
Yeah.
Because I think, okay, fine, that was their pool of voice actors, mm-hmm. and that's possibly the best they could have come up with.
Yeah.
You know, but if they want to drop me in, I'll do it.
Get that CV set.
I'll do an ISDN. I'm not proud.
So we'll wrap it up. I did warn you before the show because I kind of threw it on Jim Gellatley about adding a song to the Spotify playlist.
Yes.
So you get the choice of the second song to go on.
Okay.
What do you want to be put in there?
Okay. I was going to say if I was going to choose my favorite song of all time. Being a guy, you know, you tend to do lists and all that. And it might be Fool's Gold by the Stone Roses, but I'm not going to choose that.
Oh, okay.
Because everyone knows that one. I'm going to choose Flight of the Rat by Deep Purple.
Okay, I'm not aware of that one myself.
Well, I grew up with Deep Purple because even though they split up when I was 3 years old, and it's nothing to do with me, but my brother... see, growing up, this is quite a serious point, actually. Growing up in an Asian household in Glasgow, we didn't have our parents Beatles or Stones or MC5 or Sly and the Family Stone or Clinton... Parliament Funkadelic collections. They weren't there. It was Bollywood soundtracks and Sikh devotional songs, which are good in their own right. But, you know, we had to kind of find, you know, in terms of Western music, we had to find our own way. So I'm the youngest of three boys. My brother Randeep, his pal at school, listened to his dad's record collection, which was Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin. And so I got into Deep Purple at the age of 9 or 10. And I feel like they were always considered to be Led Zeppelin's less successful cousin. I always thought that Zepp got all the glory. I mean, brilliant band. But I thought Deep Purple kind of left in a shadowy bit. And amazing musicianship. And I'd call Flight the Rat progressive rock, but in the best way. In the way that Radiohead is progressive rock, but in the best way. But, you know, they aren't wearing capes and they aren't on ice. So Flight of the Rat, I think, is their best... is the best that Deep Purple got in the studio and was the best that they approximated to their amazing live performances. And it's quite long.
Brilliant. It's probably the best explanation we've had for albeit you're only the second guest. It was a brilliant explanation of why it's in there.
That's the second best explanation we've
ever had. But, so where can people find you?
In the kitchen at parties. That's a very obscure song reference.
It was in the IKEA advert, I know it.
Yeah, oh, it was in the IKEA advert. And it was my Christmas joke this year and every year because I came up with it myself. Do you know it?
No, what is it?
Where does Joe Louis do his Christmas shopping? Debenum, 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 debenum.
See, imagine getting that in a cracker. That would be your Christmas made.
Yeah, I think so, because there's a bit of thought gone into that. So where can people find me? We're actually writing the next series of Fags, Mags and Bags at the minute, but that won't go out till July, August. Still game. I don't know when that's going out yet. I'm still on River City every Tuesday night. I'll be back filming that in a month. I'm actually, quite interestingly, also presenting a documentary about turbans.
Okay.
In Britain, because I come from a Sikh family. I'm the only guy in the family that doesn't wear a turban.
But I was going to say, Hardeep does.
Hardeep does. And my brother Randeep, who is the Deep Purple fan, who got us into Deep Purple, he is now top brass cop. He's the highest ranking turban Sikh in the Met.
Oh, nice.
Interviewed him on Sunday there. So he'll be part of the documentary as well. That is interesting. It's an interesting snapshot of where the Sikh community is. In Britain, I've had fun doing it, so I think that'll be out maybe March, April time as well. So at the minute, just River City.
Brilliant.
At the minute, yeah.
And what's your Twitter so people can find your daily jokes?
My daily jokes.
Daily dad jokes.
I don't know what to think about dad jokes. I mean, I think this is a serious point, is like if I do like I did one. It was like, I'm not going to give you my very simple recipe for Herbie Fish, time and a place. And I put some thought into that. Right? And I got it within 140 characters. And then five people will come back with, that's a bit fishy. That's just lazy, you know? Also, it's the point of the pun is it has to conjure up. It's either about how tenuous and... And, you know, getting making that journey 140 characters, But also, it can sometimes spin a beautiful image. So, for example, I just walked past a white supremacist milliner called a hat for every Caucasian. Now, the joke isn't brilliant, but the idea that there might be a white supremacist milliner is a funny idea. So don't be lazy.
That's the good bit. Is it Django Unchained?
Yes.
And they're all on the horses and they don't... It's basically the first Ku Klux Klan and they've all got bags on their head. Yeah. It's like, why did you get...
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they had to have a decision at one point.
Someone had to make that decision. Yeah. So I'm at Govinda Jeggi, which... and the people asked me where that came from. That was that show Shredded Week that I mentioned at the beginning. Mm-hmm. That the two Neds that do the arts roundup were called Alan and Govinda Jeggi. So Govinda Jeggi is where I live on Twitter.
Brilliant. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And it's been brilliant speaking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Whoa. That's fun. Yeah. That's your ears afterwards, isn't it?
Aye. Oh. Yeah.